From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM later tonight. When did you die? And by the way, happy Thanksgiving to all of you, and thank you for joining us tonight on our live Thanksgiving night program. Here's what's happening. Breaking a month-long lull in missile tests, North Korea has fired two short-range projectiles into the sea off its eastern coast in what appeared to be the latest tryout of its new multiple rocket launchers. The test firing came as the clock ticks down on the year-end deadline that the North had given us, the United States, to show flexibility in their stalled denuclearization talks. We'll see what happens there. Pro-democracy protesters in Hong Kong cheered President Donald Trump and members of Congress for passing two laws that support the months-long uprising that has crippled the city, while Beijing's anger over the legislation was on full display. The protests in Hong Kong started in June in response in part to an extradition bill that would have sent alleged criminals to China to stand trial. The bill never went forward, but the protests remain and only grew in size and violence since June. Dr. John Curtis, onlinecolumnist.com, with us. John, I hope you had a good Thanksgiving with your family, and what do you think of all of this?
It's not going to be good for the market tomorrow morning, I can tell you that. I mean, the Asian markets have been crashing all day, and, given the sensitivity of the trade talks with China and the knowing that Xi Jinping is not happy about U.S. meddling or any country meddling in China's internal affairs, it would seem to me that there's going to be consequences to this. And, of course, Trump is in Afghanistan right now, a surprise visit to the troops over there. And he signed, Marco Rubio's bill that essentially, puts China on notice that the U.S. reserves the right to cancel any trade policy with them pending a human rights review. And they're also very sensitive to that. We know what goes on in China. It's a, totalitarian regime. We know that there are no human rights over there. And yet, 1971, there was a certain wisdom that Henry Kissinger had and Richard Nixon, President Nixon, and going over and opening the doors, probably the greatest single business move that the U.S. has ever done in the history of the country, was opening up those markets. Now, Trump, as you know, is a candidate, and as the president has run against, the trade deficit that we've had with China, claiming that the U.S. has lost a lot of manufacturing jobs. But I can tell you this, that this does not play well in China. The their foreign ministry today, if you've listened to or read any of the quotes, sounds worse than North Korea at its worst point, basically accusing the U.S. of really being clueless, hegemony warmongers, basically meddling in their affairs. And I don't think it's going to have good consequences tomorrow financially. And I frankly think it was a really bad move. It remains to be seen whether we're going to get another postponement of the trade war. And I think if we do, look for the stock market to be shaved by a considerable amount if this thing crashes.
I think you're right, John. Thank you so much. Well, a former Deutsche Bank executive who reportedly signed off on some of the aggressive loans to Donald Trump at the time killed himself in his Malibu home. Thomas Bowers, the one-time head of the Deutsche Bank's American Wealth Management Division, where he oversaw Mr. Trump's private banking, committed suicide by hanging himself, according to the Los Angeles County Medical Examiner. Bowers was 55 years old. Shocking statistics reveal that not enough babies are being born to replace the U.S. population as the birth rates plunge to a 30-year low. The report revealed that fertility rates dropped to a record low last year. There were 2% fewer births. An 80-year-old man in China wound up in the hospital after he swallowed his dentures while eating pancakes. I'm not kidding. The man, identified as Mr. Shang, was brought to the hospital in East China after the accident when he realized that he was suddenly missing his teeth. I can't make these things up. Researchers are trying to determine whether an 18,000-year-old puppy found in Siberia is a dog or a wolf. The canine, which has 2 months when it died, it was 2 months old when it died, has been remarkably preserved in the permafrost of the Russian region with its fur, nose, and teeth all intact. Scientists say that it could mean that the specimen represents an evolutionary link between wolves and modern dogs. What else is going on? Let's check in with Peter Davenport from the National UFO Reporting Center. And Peter, I trust you had a good Thanksgiving.
I had a wonderful time, George, and I spent a good portion of the day just ruminating on all the wonderful things we should be thankful for in this country.
Indeed.
I hope we can preserve them. A lot of good reports. Start with one from Tremont, Minnesota. This past Saturday, a gentleman writes, he was sitting in a parking lot, his car was facing south, and he saw a gray object streaking from his left to right, from east to west, at very high speed. When it got to the south, from his vantage point, it suddenly joined with a second object, a distinctly black object, and the two accelerated, he writes, dramatically, and streak off to the western horizon. The next sighting comes from San Bernardino, down near your field of your residence.
When I'm out in L.A., at least.
You're out in the West Coast, that's right. A young fellow writes that he and his father were climbing onto the roof of his garage to inspect the shingles, and he looked up into the sky, and he saw a cluster of white objects circling, flying in very unwavering formation relative to one another. His first impression was it had to be birds, but the more he looked at it, the more he realized that their flight pattern was incompatible with birds. And his father looked at them as well. He got a very good photo, and we should have that posted to our website by Saturday of this upcoming weekend. Third report I'd like to share with our audience comes from Pembroke Pines, Florida. This is another mysterious sounds case, George, that I've reported in the past. I know Linda Howe has reported them as well, and others perhaps too. But a gentleman writes that at 7 a.m. on Monday of this week, the 25th of November, he heard a very deep-throated rumbling sound that rattled his house, and it quit after a minute or two, and that went on for about an hour and a half with the intermittent sounds that seemed to emanate from the sky. They couldn't be sure where they were coming from. Here's a good report that I'm really looking forward to sharing with our audience. On Monday of this week, I got a call from a very bright-sounding young woman from Snohomish, Washington. She describes herself as an SAHM. I had to look that up, George. That's a stay-at-home mom.
Nothing wrong with that.
Nothing wrong with that. Those two kids are very lucky to have her as a mom. She's so sharp and eloquent. But she describes in great detail how on Monday night at about 11:45 p.m., she was awakened from a sound sleep by flashing strobing lights that were coming through her bedroom window. She got up and looked out, and suddenly what appeared to her to be a cloud of light just suddenly coalesced into six oval objects. I think they were white, but I'm not sure. She doesn't address the color. And they formed a triangular pattern and suddenly accelerated and streaked off to the southeastern sky. Very interesting report. Next one I'd like to share comes from Ventura, California, again down in your neck of the woods. Husband and wife, both professionals, describe a very peculiar incident that happened yesterday morning, 2:45 in the morning on Wednesday, yesterday. They were aghast to see a beam of light that suddenly shot down from the sky and illuminated a huge area of the Ventura city, very close to the airport, Camarillo Airport. And it lasted for only about 15 seconds, but it was so dramatic, they said, they looked on social media the next morning hoping to see some kind of reference to it, and they saw absolutely nothing. So if anybody saw a shaft of light in Ventura, California yesterday, please submit a report using our online report form at ufocenter.com. I've got other reports, George, but I'll save them until next week.
You got it. Thank you, Peter. Peter Davenport from the National UFO Reporting Center. Does the Bible predict an asteroid or something else? In a moment, Tom Horn joins us. The Wormwood Prophecy, next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Is the star from Revelation 8 already headed toward planet Earth? What's more, do government officials already know the answer to that question? It's a big, scary story. Traditionally, scholarly interpretation claims that the Wormwood star will be an asteroid. Others think it could be something else. Longtime television and radio personality, best-selling author, publisher Thomas Horn serves as the chief executive officer of Skywatch TV, known for its breaking news and in-depth investigative reports about prophecy, conspiracies, and the supernatural. And his latest work is called The Wormwood Prophecy. Thomas, back with us on Coast to Coast. Great job with this, Tom, by the way.
Thank you, George. And by the way, Thanksgiving. Happy Thanksgiving.
You too. I hope it was a delightful one for you.
Yeah, except for the Dallas Cowboys losing again. But besides that, it was great.
Well, and my Piston and my Lions lost too, by the way, to the Chicago Bears.
Yeah.
I mean, it's almost it's beginning to become tradition.
Yeah, that's
the Lions lose.
Traditions, right.
Absolutely. Wormwood, the Wormwood Prophecy. Explain, first of all, Tom, what is the biblical verbiage for wormwood?
Yeah, well, so wormwood, from the title of my books, derived from the Bible's book of Revelation, which you mentioned, chapter 8, 10, and 11, where it says, "And the third angel sounded, and there fell a great star." Now, interestingly here, the Greek word star is astron, asteroid. "So there fell a great asteroid from heaven, burning as it were a lamp, and it fell upon the third part of the rivers and upon the fountains of waters. And the name of the star is called Wormwood, and the third part of the waters became wormwood, and many men died of the waters because they were made bitter," end quote. So that is that's the biblical reference to the question about what is wormwood.
Now, have civilizations in the past tried to interpret what wormwood might be?
Yeah, in fact, if you talk to our mutual friend, Dr. Michael Heiser, he would tell you that if you was to ask a first century church father what is being described here, they more likely would have attributed it to the presence of an angel or an angel of judgment that is going to bring famine upon the land. And that is because, and this is in the Bible, but it's not only in the Bible, it's in other books as well, where the word star is often used synonymous with the idea of the gods or the agents of the gods moving about in the heavens.
Interesting. And isn't Chernobyl, doesn't it mean wormwood?
That's what I understand, yes.
Yeah, that's a strange paradox right there as well. What got you interested in this specific topic, Tom?
Yeah, so I became very interested in this particular biblical prediction earlier this year after a familiar metaphysical experience that I've had on a few occasions in my life that's produced profound revelations. I mean, it sounds shocking. I can prove it. It started over 40 years ago when I died, and my wife discovered me dead. I had no pulse. I had no heartbeat.
Oh, my God.
No breath. She spent some time trying to revive me. Now, while she was doing that, I myself, however, saw myself standing in front of a very brilliant white light, and in my mind, I perceived this to be God, and that he had told me a series of things, somehow sealed those things within me, only to be remembered at specific future times. Then I woke up, came back to life. All the details of that story are far too involved for a program of this length, but suffice it to say that from that day forward, on a few occasions, and strangely enough, I can't explain this, but always right around 2 o'clock in the morning, I am drawn into a very vivid three-dimensional a night vision, I guess the ancients would call it, a dream, but not like the kind of normal dreams. I mean, this looks like a full-on panoramic, Hollywood-produced, three-dimensional, full-color depiction that I am standing and watching. And it always involves glimpses of things that shortly thereafter come to pass. Let me give you a really quick example of this that people everywhere know. In 2010, this happened to me again. And I, again, too many details to describe, but I saw very dark clouds rising up over the Vatican, up over St. Peter's Square. I could also hear something, George, like an engine. I've never understood this, but like the rumbling of a diesel engine or something, very loud, rumbling in the background. I don't know what that was about.
Hmm.
But when I woke up, I sat up in bed, and I wrote down, Pope Benedict XVI is going to resign in April 2012. Now, people will know this because they can go and Google these and watch the videos of me in 2011 on all these different programs. In fact, I think I was on with you talking about it, George. I was on with Sid Roth on It's Supernatural. I was on with Jim Baker, The Jim Baker Show, Prophecy Watchers. Anyway, all these programs, 2011, and I went out on a limb, and I said, I believe that Pope Benedict XVI is going to resign in April of 2012. Now, when 2012 came and went, and it didn't appear that he had resigned, I started questioning myself. But then, February 28th, 2013, the Vatican comes out and they say Pope Benedict XVI has stepped down. He has resigned. He's retired. And that same day, their media outlet, the El Observatorio Romano, gave an interview with the New York Times. And in that interview, which people can Google now and they can read it, the Vatican admitted to the New York Times that Pope Benedict had actually secretly resigned before the Roman Curia, the Vatican government, when he returned from a trip in April of 2012. And from that point forward, they were making plans. They were remodeling a little building that the nuns had been using that he was going to live in as an apartment, and preparing to make the announcement to the world. When that happened, George, my phone was ringing off the hook.
I bet. Jeez.
Including CNN. I mean, everybody wanted to know, you know, who was my insider at the Vatican. But I knew that with, you know, when things are metaphysical, beyond physical, you really can't explain that to most people who just do not get that other reality. So anyway, what does that have to do with where I'm at now? Early this year, in 2019, I went to bed as usual, and again, around 2 a.m., I suddenly entered this most vivid, and this was the most terrifying dream state image I've ever seen. It scared me terribly. I'm standing somewhere on the ground. I'm looking up into the deep heavens, and I see what I think is a horned, fiery serpent, hundreds of feet wide. It's racing towards the earth, undulating like a serpent back and forth in the deep heavens at incomprehensible speed. Then, all of a sudden, my point of view changes, and I am up above this terrifying monster, and now I can see that, in fact, it's a very large space rock, an asteroid. And due to the way it is hurtling through space, the way the light of the sun is falling on it, it's playing a trick on the contours and making it look as if it is something swimming serpent-like through the heavens. Now I see myself back on Earth again. I'm atop this tall hill, and I am running as fast as I possibly can run. Hordes of people, and they're all screaming, and they're all crying out to their gods to deliver them from what is coming. Then an incredible boom. A cracking sound, as if the ground, the tectonic plates are literally cracking beneath our feet. And this asteroid plunges into the Pacific Ocean. It knocks us all off of our feet. This massive form sends this whole sequence of tsunamis, hundreds of feet in height, slamming into the coastal terrains of regions across nearly half the world. Then I look behind me. I'm trying to get back up on my feet. And this massive wall of water comes up over the top of this hill that all of us have been running across. Now my POV changes again, and I can see the atmosphere is being infused with scorched particles of aerosol and vapor that are coming up out of the boiling waters of the ocean from this giant.
God, and those are planet killers.
This is literally, well, it looks to me, I didn't take time to stop and think about it in that way in that moment. All I know is I'm very desperate. Everybody around me is desperate, and we are literally running from for our lives as the Earth's atmosphere is ignited with this series of high-velocity hurricanes across the hemisphere of the world. Anyway,
hold on for a second, Tom. We're at the break already, but let's come back and pick this up right here. Tom Horn with us. The Wormwood Prophecy. We'll take calls with Tom next hour. And welcome back to Coast. George Norrie with you. Tom Horn with us. So, Tom, you were having this wretched dream. Go ahead. I'll let you pick that story up again.
Yeah, and because, you know, if I go into every detail, it just would dominate the whole program. So let me just finish it by saying this. As I'm watching all of this unfold, so much debris is released from the initial asteroid impact and the devastation of all of that, that for about a week, darkness covered the sky worldwide as the entire landscape is pounded by hurricanes and atmospheric annihilation, all this stuff that's going on. But then fast forward a few days, and you know how dreams are, it's not really related to time. Time is not relevant in terms of a dream. Then I watch as the waters finally settle down, the storms subside, the sky draws clear. But then what I see is devastation everywhere. In fact, much of life on Earth is dead. Now, with that scene in mind, suddenly I woke up. And I am in a cold sweat because this is so vivid. It is three-dimensional.
And realistic.
Actually, not only realistic, and I can't put my finger on this, but it's that world where I've only been a couple times is more real than this matrix that we live in here, where we are limited to our five senses or six if you had time. Something there, this is like having 30 kinds of senses that you can't really even put your finger on. It's just simply more vivid, it's more alive, it's more real than the muted reality that we seem to have here. But in any case, I wake up, I sit up in bed really quick. In fact, I almost fell out of bed, and I'm getting up to get paper to write down what it is that I had seen, because this was very much like when I received the vision that Pope Benedict XVI was going to resign. That's not the only one, but this show is not about things that I've seen in the past. But I sit up in my bed, and I'm going to get paper and pencil, start writing down what I saw, which I eventually did. But immediately, it was as if something whispered in my ear. Now, I don't know if this is just in my head. I don't know if, you know, there's an angel there. I don't have no idea. But it sounded like something whispered in my ear, one word, and that was the word Apophis. Now, I knew that there was this ancient Egyptian god, demon, whatever, of destruction, a chaos dragon that moved, you know, every night, fought the fight. Egyptian mythology, the Greek mythology, they all seem to kind of have these chaos dragon stories. I knew that Egypt had such a god of chaos known as Apophis, but I really didn't know very much about it.
And there's also an asteroid called that.
Well, and that was the second thing that I knew, was that NASA had named a particular asteroid Apophis, and I knew really nothing about that other than there was an asteroid named Apophis. So when I got up out of bed, the first thing I did was I went to my computer, and I started doing research, especially into Apophis, the asteroid. And what I found was that it had been discovered in 2004. When it was discovered, at that time, even NASA's NEOWISE team believed that there was a chance that it was going to impact the Earth. They changed those opinions later. And by the way, in all my research for the Wormwood Prophecy, I came to believe that this is part of a conspiracy. But in any case, they changed their opinion later and said it's going to come very close, but it's not going to hit the Earth. Now, how close is very close? So close that it's going to take out the satellites in orbit around our Earth. So this is,
oh, gosh.
This is pretty amazing, right, for them to admit that part of it. But in any case, Apophis. It's 370 meters or 1,200 feet wide, or because you and I started talking about the NFL when we started this program, it is four NFL football fields in size. It weighs an estimated 20 million metric tons. It is traveling at 28,000 miles an hour. So we're talking about a mind-bending mass and a potential inertia velocity encounter that most people can't even begin to fathom. Now, NASA and some of their own astronomers are saying there is a chance that it will impact the Earth. And of all dates, by the way, Friday the 13th, April 2029. If it does, their mapping methodology says it is most likely to come down on the coastlines of California and Mexico, so it's going to be in a highly densely populated area. If it hits the Earth, the impact is going to unleash a blast, the equivalent of over a billion tons of TNT. Or to put that into a better perspective, more than 65,000 Hiroshima nuclear warheads that sunk Nagasaki. Or to also put it into perspective, basically equivalent to every known nuclear warhead on the Earth today going off all at the same time in one area.
And Tom, you want to add to the mystery, April 13th, 2018 was the night Art Bell died.
Oh, I did. I had forgot that.
Add that to the mystery. Jeez.
So the bottom line is NASA admits if it impacts the Earth, it's going to lead to tens of millions, if not billions, of deaths. And that just from the initial impact. And not counting, if you're not a prophecy believer or something, not counting years of climate disruption as a result of that initial impact. And so that was what I started finding. But I have a friend, and now here's this is partly what got me involved in believing that NASA is involved in a cover-up. I have a friend. He works with NASA. He has above top secret security clearance. Through him, I met another guy that also works at NASA. But this one friend, I know him really well, and this can be proven because at first, what he told me, he told me that there are actually two space agencies. There's the one that everybody knows, the National Aeronautical Space Agency, NASA. But then he says there's the real one, and that's where most of the real money flows into. And he said in that aspect of the agency, that mirror of NASA, they believe that Apophis is going to impact the Earth. Now, he had given me information. I wrote about all this. I actually put it in the book, The Wormwood Prophecy. And then in August of this year, I'm at my own sold-out prophecy conference in Branson, Missouri. And all of a sudden, he shows up. In fact, Derek Gilbert, who was on with you last week, Derek was there in Sharon, and I introduced him to them. But he says, I got to talk to you. So we go into the back room behind a closed door. I can't tell you what he told me, but he told me this. He said, you have got to take my name out of that book, and you've got to change what I told you. And I said, okay, I'll do that. Why? Well, it turns out his superiors.
Mm-hmm. They want it out.
Had found out that he had talked to him. Well, they brought him before an adjudicator. They were threatening him with more than just his job and a bunch of other stuff. He's got he's under contract. And basically they're like, so you like to talk, huh? And they put him under the gun. So he told me, look, you got, and so I did. And in fact, Charisma could verify this. I got a hold of them and I said, hold the presses, hold. We got to take his name out. This guy is under severe threat.
Gee, that's the event Steve Quayle was at too, right?
No, Steve had a different conference. I spoke at one of them a couple of years ago, but he had a different conference that was talking about the alien agenda.
Okay.
Steve and I, we do a lot of stuff. In fact, he's going to be here in a couple of weeks. We're going to shoot some programs on Skywatch TV promoting his upcoming conference. My conference in Branson this year is already sold out. And we're going to have, Governor Mike Huckabee, just all these people. Pat Boone, by the way.
Oh, if you tell him hi, he's a dear friend of ours.
Yeah, so I'll let him know that. But anyway, So then what I had to do is I had to do some of this stuff clandestinely. I had to say, well, what do you, I won't talk about it publicly, but what can you tell me? Well, he was the one that pointed me, for instance, to others, really superior minds that also are pointing to a cover-up by NASA, and I'll tell you which one one of them is. I cite him in the book. It's a recent peer-reviewed paper. In fact, it's a long name, but let me give you the name real quick for people that listen to your program that want to verify this. The name of the article is called An Empirical Examination of WISE NEOWISE Near-Earth Object Wide Field Infrared Survey Explorer Asteroid Analysis and Results.
That's the name of the article?
That's
wow.
The name, and it's a peer-reviewed article. It's published in an astronomical peer-reviewed magazine. Anyway, it is by physicist Nathan Myhrvold. Now, I don't know if you've ever interviewed him on Coast to Coast AM. He is the former chief technology officer at Microsoft.
No, I don't think so.
He's a true polymath. He's a working scientist. He's published original research in everything from paleobiology to climatology, but also astronomy. He holds over 800 U.S. patents. So the guy is a true brainiac. In fact, The Economist magazine recently described Myhrvold as Bill Gates' second brain and pointed out that he is almost always, every year, in the A-list of the world's 100 greatest thinkers. So, okay, so the guy is totally qualified. He's a brainiac. He wrote this article, and oh, my goodness, it was only published a few months ago, but if you look that up and read it, he charges NASA with deliberately misreporting the threats by near-Earth, more than just one, more than just Apophis, but near-Earth objects being tracked by their NEOWISE project. He accuses the scientists at the space agency of behaving, and these are his words, extremely deceptively with deliberate scientific misconduct in a cover-up of very real, potentially imminent threats. In fact, he goes so far as to say, the issues I am calling misconduct in NEOWISE papers are not inadvertent. They are deliberate choices being made repeatedly by the NEOWISE team. So I just encourage people, go get the paper. The man is ultimately, eminently qualified, and he is part of what began for me unmasking the fact that the European Space Agency, NASA, there's 70 space agencies. That's an interesting number, isn't it, 70? But there's 70 space agencies, and behind the scenes in this mirror space aeronautical community, they are working on efforts to try to determine how, if possible, they could mitigate the Apophis asteroid from impacting the Earth in 2029.
Are you convinced that Apophis is wormwood?
Well, yes. You know, a man that receives something via a revelation looks at it in a way different than anybody else would. But I personally believe that it is. In fact, I asked one of the, my friend, an astronomer at NASA, not just to translate Revelation 8, 10 through 11 for me, but all of Revelation chapter 8. And it was amazing how every line in Revelation 8, the first trumpet, the second trumpet, third trumpet, fourth trumpet, all of them are describing in detail the actual order in which Earth would be impacted either by a two-part asteroid or a very large asteroid like Apophis breaking up as it enters into our atmosphere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and if we blow it up, there's also that danger. If we blow it up, it could become like a shotgun shell attack.
Well, that's another part of this is that, behind the scenes they're trying to determine how can you mitigate, but even some of their astronomers are talking publicly now about such things like, okay, what, you know, if we're going to send Bruce Willis and the
exactly.
And his team up there to blast it with a bunch of nukes, what's going to happen? And the problem, there's a twofold problem with that idea. One being that it is such a large rock, that it has such a strong gravitational field, that if you hit it with some nukes and let's say blow some parts of it off, the gravitational field is just going to draw it all back together anyway.
That's right.
So that probably is completely ineffective. But secondly, look at what you've done. You've now radiated this thing, And then on impact with the Earth, it's boiling. It's doing all the things that I saw, and it's creating an aerosol that draws all this material up into space, and then it gets caught in, you know, the wind systems in our upper atmosphere that, you know, that spread all this debris all around the world, and now it's raining down on the Earth a radioactive rain. And in fact, there's in the book I talk about several ways in which wormwood could poison the waters of the Earth, because that's part of this. It says that the waters become wormwood, and by that, you know, a great deal of individuals on the Earth die. And so when I first read that text, I thought, okay, in what way could wormwood affect the waters of the Earth? And at first, I was just thinking, okay, it hits, the ocean, the waters become polluted, they go back up through the tributaries. But, I mean, this would really take a lot to contaminate all the potable waters of the Earth. So I got a hold of Lieutenant Colonel Robert McGinnis, who is a senior analyst at the Pentagon.
Yep, he's been on the program.
Yeah, and that, well, if he was on your program, he was probably talking about a book I published.
Yep, sure was.
But so I got a hold of him, and I said, can you put me in contact with an impact specialist working for the government, which he did, and I interviewed him, and I said, you know, does the wormwood prophecy in the Book of Revelation, I mean, of what size and scope would it need to be? Would Apophis fulfill the different description there specifically? Could it contaminate X number of waters? Well, I was really small thinking about it, and I learned through him and others that there's actually a number of ways. In fact, in the book, what I even call the Andromeda strain factor. You know, you recently had Daniel Wilson
last night.
Yeah. Talking, you know, he's going to get this opportunity to create the sequel to the Andromeda strain, but that was another one of the possible ways in which wormwood could pollute the Earth because of the waters of the Earth. Because if Apophis is carrying an extremophile, a microorganism that can survive in extreme cold and heat, and we know that they do because we've found them inside volcanoes and also under the ice of the Antarctica. So we know that there are extremophile microorganisms that can survive. And what if a microorganism on Apophis also has a virus within it that is an alien virus? It's surviving as a result of the microorganism, and it impacts the Earth. It goes, all this stuff goes into the upper atmosphere, starts raining down upon the Earth, and it could literally become a pandemic that wipes out a great deal of people on the planet. So there are ways in which the asteroid Apophis could indeed fulfill the scripture as it is described in the Book of Revelation.
And Tom, you talk about President Trump and his role with wormwood. Let's talk about that and take phone calls next on Coast to Coast AM.